Hi, ladies, and welcome to the Story Night podcast. I'm Jessica Campbell, and stories are my passion. It's my honor to host this podcast where real women share real stories of real hope. Each episode features one woman sharing her personal story with you. Too often, we fall into the traps of comparison and judgment, but what if we took the time to hear each other's real stories? Let's remember that we all have a story, and our stories matter. We're so glad you've joined us on this podcast journey. May you find hope and encouragement in this episode's story. Hi, ladies, and welcome back to the Story Night podcast. If this is your first time finding us, welcome. We're so glad you're here. You have just stumbled upon part two of a two-part story. So if this is the very first time you've ever clicked on the Story Night podcast, you're going to need to stop right here, pause this episode, go back one episode and listen to part one of Sally's story so that then you can pick up with this episode and hear part two. Now, for those who have been waiting for part two, we left you on a bit of a cliffhanger in a really hard part of Sally's story, and we want to rewind the tape just a little bit, maybe give a quick recap of what happened to Sally and where she was at mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, all of that during the season where we're going to pick up the story here for part two. Sally, welcome back. Thank you so much for being willing to do this with us a second time. Could you give just maybe a 30-second recap of what you shared in part one, and then we'll pick up the story with a really important season of surrender?
Yes, thank you. What I covered mostly in part one was the journey of becoming a quadrilateral amputee after what was to be a very basic surgery went bad and resulted in infection and resulted in a fight for my life, but ultimately resulted in myself and my family and everyone else that was involved watching the Lord work in our lives and teach us a lot of things along the way, building our faith and ultimately getting me to a point that I really, if I had any chance of getting through the whole ordeal, I knew that I had to reach a point of pure and total surrender to Him and not try to hang on to it all and do it all in my own strength by pulling up my bootstraps and putting on my big girl panties, as they say, and handling it on my own because it wasn't working that way.
To just paint the picture, if I've got all of the dates right here, at this point, you would have been in your early 40s with there four children total. You have a stepchild and three children together with your husband, and the youngest was about 3 years old.
That's right.
And so now you've got to go back home without your feet, without essentially all of your fingers. You were left, as you described it, a pincher on your left hand. And now life is going to be different. And not just for you, as you said, for your husband and for your kids as well. And so I want to hear a little bit of that journey of coming home, that healing process. At this moment of your story, how were things going? And how did you end up healing and figuring out how to surrender?
Things were unsettled. That's a kind way to put it. Unsettled in my spirit, inside of myself. I was functioning every day outwardly, doing my best to enter back into my role as wife, mother, wear all the different hats, you know, wherever, whatever the kids were doing and needed to do and all of those things. But inside of myself, there was continual turmoil. All I could think to do, Jessica, was face it all on my own, just really fix my mind that I could do this, I could do this, I could do this. And I couldn't do this. Every day I would end up in tears, feeling defeated, exhausted in every way, shape, or form. I continued to call it spiritual warfare. I've never felt such a pull inside of my spirit for thinking one way and then a minute later thinking another way and just a constant battle within. And I guess I did a pretty good job of keeping that suppressed, but it was there and it was very real. We ended up one day, there were a couple situations where I just was distraught, devastated. I could not even think about trying to put one foot forward in front of the other anymore. And we took our dogs one day to a dog beach to let them run. And this is just one example of many that we saw how much care the Lord had for us. I'll summarize the story in that we were at this beach. I wanted to sit and just read my Bible, and I was having a really rough day. We left to get back in the car to go back home, and looking out a little ways from our car, my husband Jerry said, "Sally, look." And there in the distance, not too far, was a young lady walking towards us with a prosthetic leg, in shorts, just walking right along with her husband and their daughter and their dog. And my husband literally pulled me out of the car and said, "We have to go and talk to them." And I was very hesitant. Thing, you just kind of don't really just go up to strangers and approach them, but he did, and we did. And he looked at this lady. I had on a long dress covering my prosthetics. I had on, and he looked at this lady and said, "My wife is having a really hard day." And she looked at him just with very curious expression, of course. And all he did was lift up my long dress enough for her to see my ankles, my legs, both of my legs. And she just looked at me with the most compassion and caring eyes I've ever seen and just said, "Oh." And she said, "It'll get better." And she hugged me and I hugged her and we just held on to each other. And again, long story short, she gave me her card. She was a local pediatrician and said, "Call me day or night, but I promise you it's going to get better." We all went our ways, and I never had any reason to call her. I did bump into her from time to time, but never called her. But I got in the car, and I just wept with gratitude and thankfulness that my God was so personal, that He cared enough just about Sally Lucia that day to send another woman with a prosthetic leg. Sure, her disability was not as severe as mine, but that wasn't the point. It was simply the fact that he showed up, and he showed up in a big way for us, primarily me. And that just gave me so much hope, because just prior to that, when I was sitting on the beach, I had prayed, "Lord, you've got to show me something today. If you don't show me something today, I am not going to make it." And that was when I began to sort of call him on his promises that he's going to meet our needs, that he's never going to leave us nor forsake us, that he is there for us. But I literally had prayed that prayer, and then 5 minutes later, this happened. So we saw the Lord in a big way. And at that point, I knew more than ever that I could not do this. I could not walk this walk without surrendering it all to him. I could not go home again and keep trying to do it all in my own strength and just face every day in this battle and the feeling of defeat. So that was a big turning point there when I did realize how much I had to just let it go.
Right.
I think, we all struggle with that. We want to control everything, especially something this big. We want to control the outcome. We want to control the fact, we want to make sure we can make it. And I just had to let it go. So that was, like I said, just a really big turning point there in
Right.
my surrender. It wasn't just like a switch was flipped and all of a sudden Sally decided to surrender. And so everything got all peachy keen. It wasn't the case at all. It was a journey, and it was a journey that took me through a lot of learning and a lot of changes and a lot of faith building. But primarily, the thing that I learned the most and trusted in the most was that God was sovereign and that He had a plan, and I had to make a choice. And I think one of the key words that I would like to make sure people hear is that we always have a choice. And we can choose it to it for our better, or we can choose it to not be for our better. And we can go kicking and screaming, or we can go willingly and see what becomes of it. So I learned of the Lord's sovereignty, and I learned that I had to make a choice. So I did make that conscious choice that I was going to, from that point on, try very much to continue in that mindset of surrendering and not trying to pick everything back up and go my own way and all of those things.
That word choice is so critical. And I know, ladies listening, you needed to hear that because no matter what your story is, no matter what trial you have, you will always have the choice of how you're going to approach it and what attitude you have. And to your point, Sally, it's not a one day choice. It's not just, well, I'm going to pick this one thing one time and move in a linear direction from that point forward. These are struggles and choices you'll make every day, maybe even sometimes every 5 minutes, depending on how the day's going. But what a beautiful gift, and seeing how you were loved and that this woman came to give you some encouragement, and how much we can do that for somebody else just walking along in our path. We never know who we're passing by who is having a really hard day and might need a dose of hope or just a smile or a hug or something. Now, because I know what's coming in your story, you can look back and see how much you were being prepared to surrender at an even greater level, which is hard to believe, right? But what practice you were given to surrender and to practice with those choices and practice that attitude and that trust, knowing that your story wasn't over yet. And so we're going to fast forward a bit through your story, and maybe now you can give us a timestamp on how life was before the next trial hit, because you were going to get a diagnosis.
Right. So fast forward all the way to 2024, the first half of the year, my son was engaged in 2023, and in 2024, full-blown wedding plans were underway, and the date was set for June 8th of 24, and everybody was looking forward to that big event, and that was our focus. And we were so excited for wedding preparations. This was my last child getting married, my only son getting married. And so that was just, a little extra special. However, one day I ended up with a little bit of a rash on the left side of my chest. And it was annoying enough for me to go see a doctor. And I just went to the general walk-in clinic because trying to, get into the regular doctor was going to take some time. And it was annoying and itching and all of those things. And so I did that. And the doctor came in and she said, "I understand you have a rash." And I said, "Yes, I do." And so she had asked me a series of questions, but one of those was, "When was your last mammogram?" And so I told her that it had been a little longer than it should have been. So she explained to me that she wanted to do that. She wanted to order a mammogram. And so we did that. And she ordered it actually rather quickly, so within a couple of days, because she had some ideas that sometimes breast cancer can show itself through a rash, which was something I completely had never known. So I went through the series of tests and whatnot, and they said, "If we see something in your mammogram, we're going to place you in the next room to go further with an ultrasound." So they did that. They put me in the next room, and I thought, "Uh-oh, that's not a good sign." But when I laid on that table, they were doing an ultrasound on the opposite side. They were doing an ultrasound on my right side of my chest, and I said to them, "Well, you guys are on the wrong side. I came in here for a rash on the left side." "Well, we know that," they said, "but what we've seen is something on the right side." And I do have to mention too that this doctor that was in there just happened to have her real title. She was a surgical oncologist who happened to be working now in a general practice walk-in clinic. So I stayed there and did the ultrasound, and sure enough, I got a report later that they wanted to do a biopsy. They did the biopsy, and it came back that I had stage two breast cancer on the right side. So, with all of the other things that were going on in terms of my son's wedding, it definitely took its place, but I was still trying to hold on to the positive thing that was going on, and that was my son's wedding. And I also felt Everything that I had learned previously with my amputations, all the truth about sovereignty and all the truth about walking in faith and really surrendering everything, it all came forefront in my mind. It was not as hard for me to live out that faith and live out what I believed because I had already learned it and it was still there. And it was something that I had already lived through once, and I knew the truth, and I knew what I needed to do. So again, I had to make that choice that I was going to surrender this diagnosis, and that after we spoke to the doctors, they said surgery was in line, but it could wait till my son's wedding. So we did the wedding and all of that, and afterwards followed up with all of the medical procedures and that I needed to have done. And that's where we were with that.
Wow. And I know there's so many more details to that story. And so, listeners, we do encourage you to get the book because you're going to want to read the full story there.
There is so much more that even went on with that, with the mastectomy, with the breast cancer. I was in and out of surgery 4 and 5 times, more than that, just because of this mastectomy. It was nothing routine about it. And I had to
Right.
just walk through all of that.
I mean, when you count up the amount of surgeries between the amputations and the hospital stay and now the breast cancer, it's mind-blowing.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know many other people that have had to go through so much medically.
Yes, true. And I keep thinking about it because every bit of it was under full anesthesia. And, I make that point because people say so much how much anesthesia just can really wreck you and just stay in your body and in your brain for so long that it takes a long time for it to leave you.
But what
So,
other choice did you have? It
none,
wasn't like there was
none.
another
I mean,
option.
yeah, absolutely.
I'm wondering, before we go into the next chapter, if we could take 2 or 3 minutes and park here just on how was your marriage through all of this? I mean, from who you've described, Jerry would be somebody who was absolutely by your side through everything. He was going to love you with feet or without feet. He was going to love you with a mastectomy or without a mastectomy. But just maybe some encouragement for those who are going through a big trial and trying to figure out how do we go forward with this? Because this affects him in a different way, of course, but
Yeah.
he's your life partner. He's doing this all with you.
Right. Foundationally, Jerry and I both had been, tried by fire, I guess you might want to say. And we both very, very much were in harmony about how we viewed trials and how we viewed the things that God allowed to happen in our lives. Did we like them? Absolutely not. We were distraught. We were upset. We were disappointed. We were all of those things. But at the same time, the other side of us, the side with the choice of perspective of, okay, he brought us through quadrilateral amputations. We became stronger in our marriage through it. We embraced each other and looked at it as something we were chosen to walk through. And so when the breast cancer diagnosis came, Jerry did get pretty upset. He got very upset, actually. He did not want me to go through something horrific again, considering what I had already been through. He was very upset and he asked the Lord for a miracle to take it away, but that was not God's plan. So he continued to be by my side and encouraged me and took me to the appointments and the surgeries and all of the things that we needed to do. And we did them together.
I appreciate you saying that he was upset because that's so real. I mean, how could anybody not be angry
Absolutely.
at some
Yeah.
level? Hearing you share your story, I know what a rock he was for you, and probably you would have said, "Okay, I can get through as many trials as God is going to throw my way. I just need my Jerry. I just need my husband with me through it."
Yeah. And that's what I called him, my Jerry. It's funny you say that.
Oh.
It's all through my Facebook posts and my book and things like that. He was my Jerry.
And now we're about to enter the chapter that is very recent. really, to the time of this recording. And I remember about a year ago when I heard about you through some mutual friends, and they were telling me at that point, you've got to have Sally on the Story Night podcast, and they had told me about the amputations and about the breast cancer. And that was obviously plenty for a story. What a journey, what an experience. They explained how wonderful you were and how encouraging you were. And of course, we would love to have Sally's story. And right when they got back and said, well, we're going to get you connected, I got a message from them saying, we're going to hold off. We're not going to connect you right now because another tragedy has struck Sally's life. And I remember reading the text and the details of it just, and I hadn't even met you. And I just thought, this cannot be happening. No, I mean, it affected me so much. And somebody who didn't know your family at all, had never spoken to you, had never seen you, had never met you.
Right.
So you were still healing from surgery from breast cancer when a double grief hit your life.
Yeah, that's right. I was nearing somewhat the end, so to speak, of the breast cancer journey. It did not go textbook whatsoever. It went on and on for some time. And then during the last month or so of it, my father, who was 89 and lived in Florida, was failing quickly in his health. He had Alzheimer's, and I was determined to be able to go see him, spend some time with him. And so, with drains in my chest, I traveled back and forth to Florida, I think at least 3 times flying. And sometimes I had drains in, sometimes they took them out. They did whatever I needed to do to get to see my dad. My sweet dad did pass away the end of July, but I was thankful that I was able to get there and see him a few times before he passed. And I was there when he did pass. Very thankful for that, considering everything that I had going on. And my dad passed, and we went through all of that. And I came home and returned to life as normal, was healing. My mastectomy site was healing, and things were getting reasonably back to normal. We were back in our routines and our church and our small group and those types of things. And on a Monday afternoon, September 23rd, actually, we were going to go to our small group, and I laid down to take a little rest. And Jerry often would just kind of tuck me in, and he and I looked at each other, and we both said almost at the same time, "See you later." And I got up to go get ready for our time we were leaving, and he wasn't back. And I looked around outside. As you all know by now, we live on a farm. There was a lot of the vehicles and equipment, and I looked for everything, and everything was in its place, and I just couldn't find him anywhere. And that's not like Jerry. He was very prompt. We always pretty well knew that if we didn't know right where he was right now, he'd be busting through the door in, less than 15 minutes, just doing what he does. So I knew, though, Jessica, that something was wrong. And I called my daughter, one of my daughters, and she came over, and she called her husband, who had actually was on the property, but in a little bit of a distance away. The next thing I know, they're coming in to tell me that my husband had had a four-wheeler accident and was laying down the lane on our property and had passed away at about 5:15 on September 23rd of 2024. I went into total shock. I was devastated, but I wanted to go where he was, and I did. And I banged on his chest and told him to wake up, but he didn't. So, within the matter of a few hours of when I laid down to rest to about 2 hours later, my husband was dead. I was now a quadrilateral amputee mastectomy healing widow. I'm chuckling because I still can't wrap my head around it. It's absolutely insane. The journey has been full of grief, full of suffering, full of disappointment, sadness, anger, but it has also been full of a faith building, God trusting, really focusing on the things again that I learned 25 years ago of how I was going to have to walk through this enormous loss if I stood any chance at all of surviving. I knew, and I'm so thankful that I had that foundation because, as hard as it's been, I cannot imagine it without that foundation.
You know, Sally, if listeners are anything like me, they just probably stopped breathing for a couple moments there. There's no way that somebody could have so many trials and so many tragedies and within one life. And yet I know because I've met so many women who have had those kinds of seasons and had those kinds of lives. It's just sometimes unimaginable, and yet it happens so often. I know there are women listening who could list 2, 3, 4, 10 traumas within their life so far. I always ask ladies in these podcast episodes if they can offer some words of encouragement to women who would relate with their story. And I do want to do that. I want to give you that opportunity. I think you've done that throughout your story, but if there was anything else you wanted to say to give some encouragement to the grieving widow, to the other amputee, to a breast cancer survivor. But I also want to talk about how those of us who are on the outside looking in can be supportive and be loving and kind and helpful, because so often we mean well, but we say the wrong thing or we say it at the wrong time. You know, it might be a really truthful and maybe even loving thing to say, but you say it at the wrong time and it can really hurt the person who's suffering. And so I would do like to touch on that topic, but just wanted to open it up to you to touch on those two things of how to encourage those who are in just the deepest grief, and then how can we, as a support system, come alongside them.
Yes, I can speak to both by experience. So I think the words that I would like to say to people who are in the throes of grief, or whether it's new, whether it's, midway, whether it's, first of all, I don't think that grief really ever ends, but I do believe that it gets better because I'm sitting here a year later and have experienced that it does get better. But I remember thinking so much again in my mind and said it to my children, we will get through this and we will grieve in a healthy way. There are so many differences between grieving in a healthy way and not grieving in a healthy way. For example, grieving in a healthy way is acknowledging your grief, not trying to press it down, not trying to cover it up, and really seeking out. And it may not be immediately, I'm not saying that, but seeking out healthy help, whether it be a program, whether it be a friend, whether it be on your knees before the Lord, just seeking out what's healthy and facing what you have to face and accepting the fact that it comes in stages. And one thing that I would de definitely encourage people to do is do find somebody to talk to, because when you do, you will realize you are not alone. And that is probably the biggest thing that people fear, or they think, oh my gosh, I have nowhere to turn. I have no one to talk to. Talk to your pastor, talk to your friend, talk to a counselor, anybody that could keep you on the right path, grieving in a healthy way. Those are my words about that. And again, saying to you that it does get better. I'm only a year out, but I have put several things in place in my life in that 1 year's time that have taken me on the other side of this journey, to this point. As far as how do people around you help? Listen, sit with the person if they want to talk. Listen, God gave us 2 ears, Jessica, and only one mouth. So I've always said, I think we're supposed to listen twice as much as we are to talk. All of those coined phrases that we always say when someone is going through something horrible, they have had somebody that's passed, and we say, "Oh, I'm so sorry for your loss." And yes, you do mean it. Or the worst one yet, when you do lose a spouse, and no offense to our Lord, but people say, "Oh, God is your husband now." Well, we don't want to hear that. I'm sorry, but we just, that is not, or you're young, you'll meet someone else. These phrases are just heart crushing. So again, be a listener. If someone does want to talk, listen. But unless they ask you for your opinion or ask you to comment, then I really wouldn't. Lots of hugs, lots and lots of affection of hugs, if they are that kind of person, helps a lot. And, you know, it's the people that I feel most compassion for are those that are not really extroverted type people. They're kind of introvert. They're not used to stepping out there and saying, "Help me. Somebody just help me." It's those people that I really feel the most compassion for and the most concern for, because I think that those are the people that typically would end up kind of getting stuck in their grief and absolutely just not knowing what to do. But I strongly suggest for anyone like that, you know, you get in a program, you get in a support system, anything like that that you can do to better yourself, push yourself to do it. But make sure it's a good one, but push yourself to do it and you will be better for it.
So true. As you were talking, it did make me think about those women who maybe they don't have a tribe yet, or they're not connected with a support group, a friend group, something. You know, there's so many different ways to have people around you that whenever life does bring a trial your way, and it will, if all of us are going to face something, that there's somebody you could call. And maybe that person knows, okay, I'm going to let the group know, and we're going to bring you a dinner, or we're going to come sit with you, or we're going to just be there to listen. And we just so strongly encourage women, if you don't feel like you have that friend group yet, or if that tribe, whether it's a church group or a Bible study or anything, ladies that you go walking with, mom friends, anything like that, that it's worth seeking that out. It's worth maybe even going outside of your comfort zone to find those connections.
Absolutely.
On that topic, I'm going to quickly speak to those who are local to the McMinnville, Oregon area, and then I'm going to close us out with letting Sally tell everyone about her book and the process of writing the book and more about how you can find it. But first, because we just talked about the importance of finding a tribe and building relationships and having people around you, for those of you listening who are within driving distance of McMinnville, Oregon, we have four live Story Night events each year in addition to this podcast. And our next live event is coming up on Thursday, October 2nd. And this is a time when 250 women are going to be gathering together to mingle and visit and connect and hear one woman tell her life story. This is going to be at the Grand Ballroom, downtown McMinnville. Doors will open at 6:30. The story will begin at 7. We are technically full, but because we're within the last week, a lot of times we'll get last-minute schedule conflicts and some cancellations. So it's worth going on the website, storynighthope.com. Click on the link to see if there's a ticket available. We would love to have you there if you can make it. As I have shared before, this particular story will not be recorded. It's not going to be put on the podcast or our YouTube channel as we usually do because of some of the specific details within this story. We are keeping it very private. So if you want to hear this encouraging story of how a community, a support group came around a woman to help her get out of abuse, you'll need to join us in person for this one. And you can mark your calendars already for January 29th, which will be our next live event. We'll have tickets on the website very, very soon for that one. And so, coming back now to you, Sally, and your book, we've mentioned it several times over the two parts of your story on this podcast that you had a chance to write all this down. And of course, people were telling you, you've got to write a book. And sure enough, you did. And it pretty recently, too. It's been out on Amazon now, not too long ago. And I wanted to give you these final minutes of our episode to share about how you did that, why you did that, and how people can find it.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Yes, I did in fact write a book. I had wanted to write a book for years and years and years because I knew I had such a story to tell, and it was a desire of my heart for a long, long, long time. And every time I would try, I would sit down, I would try, and it just could not put it in book form. But I knew enough to save things. As I said before, I knew enough to keep notes. I knew enough to keep all the newspaper articles. I just kept everything in this big bag, totally unorganized, just this big shopping bag. And fast forward again into 2024, breast cancer, which we've talked about, mastectomy, my dad's passing, and then ultimately the loss of my Jerry. Once the sort of the shock wore off about Jerry, probably 2 months after his passing, I could not write this book fast enough. And I just have to share with you that the Lord flew the doors open. I am not a writer. I'm a speaker to a degree. I write, short things, but I'm not a put it in a book form writer. So I just prayed and I kept asking people, I need some help. Enter a writing coach, young lady, sat with me, helped me. I would talk and talk and talk, and I would write, and she would clean it up, and I would write, and she would clean it up. And anyway, long story short, then the Lord sent me a publishing consultant because in the days of technology, I had no idea about that either. And ultimately, a website builder that was able to build my website. So within 6 months, I had a book written, formatted, uploaded to KDP, which is Amazon's Kindle publishing service, a website built, and a book launched on September 9th of 2025. And the book is entitled In the Midst of Suffering. It is a story of tragedy, grief, faith, and ultimately freedom. And it takes the reader from day one of my sickness in the hospital, becoming an amputee, and into everything that I just described, but in much, much, much more detail. You will learn who my husband was. You will learn who my children are and who my friends are and all the things in between. And more importantly, who the Lord is to me and what he has done for me and continues to do each and every day in this book being part of that purpose. So that is what I would really like to say. Please buy the book, share it with people. It is not about the sale, the profit of the book. It is about getting the word of hope. That hope that you can make it through suffering, that there is hope on the other side, and how my journey might help you.
Absolutely. And we will have that link in the episode notes as we did in part one. The book is called In the Midst of Suffering. I don't know very many people who could speak to that topic more than you, Sally. You really have been through the deepest sufferings and you have come through. And that gives hope to those who are in the darkest spots that maybe there is a light at the end of the tunnel, that they can make it through. There is a way forward. They have that choice. You had a choice. I'm so glad you chose life and light and hope. And I know that wasn't easy. As you said, it's a journey. There are daily struggles. And I appreciate your honesty with all of that, too. That's the whole point of Story Night, is to just be authentic with each other in our journeys because we all have a story. Many listeners might not have a story that's quote unquote as dramatic as yours, but they still have a story. And their stories matter. And that's what we want to do. We want to share those with each other because we need to be reminded that we're not alone. And there's always something to learn in somebody else's story. There's always a purpose in our stories. And I believe everybody is called to share their story in some way. Might not be on a podcast or by writing a book. Maybe you just need to share your story with somebody down the street.
That's right.
Well, thank you for the courage and the time and energy it took to write the book. I highly encourage listeners to get it. It's not super long, but it is definitely an impactful book.
Yeah, it's 108 pages, I think, and most people, the comments have been absolutely amazing. Most people have said that it is one that captures you, and they mostly read it in one sitting or maybe 2 days because they want to see what happens next.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, completely. Thank you, Sally, so much for taking time to do this. And, I just think of God's in the details, because we did not purposefully schedule this recording the week of the anniversary of Jerry's passing. That was just the way things fell into place, and talk about timing.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Thank you, Jessica. It's really been a great experience.
I'm so glad. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate your honesty and just pouring into the lives of our listeners. We always want to stop and thank our platform provider, Representative Lucetta Elmer. She is a former Story Night speaker and believes strongly in the power of sharing our stories. And she is the one, as we said, providing the platform for this season of Story Night. So thank you, Representative Elmer. And thank you, ladies, for tuning in. We wouldn't have this outreach if it weren't for women listening and sharing. And we hope that you were blessed. We hope you were encouraged. And we hope you come back next time for our next story. Until then, remember, you have a story. Your story matters. And you are not alone.